Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. Today's episode of If These Ovaries Could Talk is brought to you by MyFit Jeans.
Oh my God, I love those jeans. Mm-hmm. We're so excited to have them on board. Mm-hmm. Woo! I'm knocking stuff over already, Jamie. We're breaking the place we just got here.
Hi. Hello. Look at you guys.
Hi, everybody.
This is great. Welcome to If These Ovaries Talk Live.
Oh, my God. We're live. Who's scared? Because you probably should be.
Who knows what's going to happen? But here we are live in the Jerome L. Green. Is that what it's called?
You did it, Jamie. You did it.
You know I'm going to mess things up, guys. But we're going to try.
We're presented and recorded at the Jerome L. Green space at WNYC. There
yes.
It is.
Thank you to them. Thank you. Give them a hand.
And thank you guys for coming out in the rain. It is like crazy gross outside.
This weather is bad, but you made it out. So thank you. We can see all your faces. Which
we're like
nice
Shecky Green here. What about the weather?
So, you know, usually we talk for a long time.
Usually we talk about awards we've lost.
Which happens a lot recently.
Us. Yep. We talk about that a lot.
Yeah, I just lost an award.
Things we didn't get or will never be nominated
or
for.
Or how wild our children are.
Yep.
My daughter had a tantrum for like an hour last night. That was fun. Which, if you're a parent, understand that. That was a good time.
But now we get to talk about Stacey Ann Chin, who is excited to get her out here? I mean, I don't even understand why she's here with us, but let's not do that right now.
We've been talking with her backstage for she's so fun to talk to. Yeah. We have things in common, which is great.
Do we?
We do. We do. We've been talking with her for a while, and she's awesome. She was interviewed by the one and only Oprah Winfrey.
You guys don't know this, but Jamie often starts things off with, when we're talking about how we're going to do things, Jamie often starts things with, well, on Oprah. And I'm always like, Jamie, we're not on Oprah.
Well,
maybe, but not now.
We're not Oprah, but I do think, what would Oprah do? It's not what would Jesus do for me. It's what would Oprah do. I love Oprah. I love her. Who doesn't love Oprah?
So let's talk about Stacey Unchained. Yeah, okay, so she's because Oprah's not here.
But she's not.
So anyone who's not familiar with her, which I think is, I don't know who you are if you're not, but she's a
Oprah
poet.
Oprah or Stacey Ann?
Oh my God, stop with the Oprah, Jamie.
Yes, no, Stacey Ann.
Bring yourself back in. Mm-hmm. Yes. So she's a poet and an activist who was on Oprah, as Jamie just said.
Yeah.
But she talked about the dire consequences of coming out in her native Jamaica.
Yes, she's also the author of her memoir, The Other Side of Paradise, which if you haven't read, you have to go out and buy it.
She has some copies here.
She does. She has them here. Also, we listen to the audio version.
Yes.
Which she reads herself.
It's like,
it's magical.
I almost just said it's like poetry, but that's like the dumbest thing ever because she's a poet. We just get worse. It's fine. It's fine.
You're not here to hear about us.
No.
Or here, listen to us. But so if you haven't, you should check her out.
Three one-woman shows. The most recent, which was directed by Cynthia Nixon, you know, Little Lady Ran for Mayor.
Produced by Rosie O'Donnell, just another really cool lesbian that we love.
And I feel like we should get her out here.
Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah,
I heard an okay. Someone's with us, right?
Yes.
All right.
Let's give her a warm welcome.
All right, let's get Stacey
Unchained
out here.
Come on, Stacey.
I mean, was that the best intro that you've ever had? I feel like it might be.
I was just saying the other back there, you know, that you both have this like strange.
That about says it all right there. You could just stop.
That's it.
But strange. You're kind of watching the both of you and listening. Like, what the fuck is wrong with them? But they have this like watchable quality. Like I didn't move from the screen at all. I just kept watching and listening. It's like,
why are they doing that?
I see where this is going. Like, is there going to be another Oprah reference again?
Well, we're also like, always watching each other. Yeah.
Now I want to listen to the rest of
I'm not going to talk about Oprah anymore.
No. Oh, and
well,
there
I can't
it is.
Even promise that. I'm going to talk about Stacey.
People respect me more when they know that she has looked at me.
I mean, well, is she as amazing in person as we think she is?
She smelled very good.
Well, as do you, Stacey. I just told you smell really good.
Yeah,
earlier.
Yeah.
So, I feel bad I didn't notice. You smell great.
I also ask myself, what would Stacey Ann do now? Too,
really?
Which I just told you about backstage. My daughter was having a huge hour-long tantrum, and I thought, I bet Stacey Ann's daughter never does this. And I also thought, I bet Stacey Ann never gets mad at her daughter like I just did.
That is so not true. we have shouting matches, and she tells me that she feels like I don't love her. And I say, Zuri, don't be silly. Like, you know I love you, and I know that you know that I love you because we've talked about it at length. And then she'll be like, no, that's not what I said. I said it feels like you don't love me. And then that just shuts you up right there.
There's nothing you can say to that. There's nothing you can say. Because you want her to talk about her feelings.
I feel like when I'm done raising her, I'm going to need therapy.
I need it now.
Well, hopefully you raise her right. She pays for your therapy.
Yeah. Yes. Or at least health insurance. I mean, diapers,
listen,
whatever.
Listen, something. You know what I mean? Something.
Diapers.
Put some money in that dependent care account for you, for God's sakes.
Yeah. But, we were just saying backstage that any relationship, I mean, you think about the relationship you have with your kid between, like, birth and, say, 5, 6, maybe even into the teenage years. Some of them are, like, shits. If you think about having that relationship with anyone else, if you said to your friend, like, hey, I was with this person and they were screaming at me, and then I was carrying 8 grocery bags, and it was snowing.
And they wouldn't carry one.
And they wouldn't carry
not
one.
Not even the one with the paper towels.
And then I was also carrying the backpack that I told them not to fucking carry.
Not to bring.
Because yes. they're not going to use anything, and they're going to carry. And I have groceries, yes. and it's raining, yes. and it's late, and we stopped one last stop for something that you absolutely had to have. Mm-hmm. And then it starts raining harder, and she says, can you pick me up?
Yes.
If you had that relationship with anyone else, your friend would be like, get the fuck out. Leave. Don't call them back. Block them.
It's true.
But here you are, like, you know, it's the only relationship where if they're abusive, stuck. You just have to stay. And especially really if you're do. A lesbian and you paid a lot of money to have them.
So much. What which a great transition.
Which brings us to this podcast. What a great transition.
Welcome. So we always start with the elevator pitch, yes. where people give the elevator pitch about themselves and their family, their non-traditional family. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably have a pitch. I'd love to hear it.
The elevator pitch. I don't know. I mean, I'm a rabble rouser. I tell stories. Most of the stories come from my experience. If the world were great, like if, you know, there was no Trump, like, do you know what I mean? Or anybody who's Trump-like, or if there were no, like, white men who are so impressed with their own penises. Like, yeah. I mean,
yes.
if, you know, white women voted like black women. Like, just if all these things didn't happen in the world, I probably wouldn't have very much to say. I'd be, like, happy, like, maybe just, like, having multiple orgasms every day.
That'd be nice.
Just, you know, with my Hitachi magic wand, just chilling somewhere on a
product
beach
placement
with, like,
what
an
I just
outdoor
heard.
Outlet. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of where I would live. But because the world is so fucked up, I am intentful. I am laser sharp focused on playing my part in making it better. So I'm going to do that until I die, until like there are no more pubic hairs left on my
wow. Do they disappear? Is that so a I thing? Hear. Does anyone
so
know? That
just so I hear.
How did I not know this?
The older folks who are bolder will confirm that for us.
Wow.
I mean, like, you know, I tell young people now, I speak a lot in colleges, and I tell them, like, your pubes are going to go gray, and they are all, like, super fucking shocked all the time.
Oh, my God. I mean, the gray thing seems obvious, but the falling out is sort of like, why is there a balding factor?
It seems obvious to you because maybe it's...
Whoa, Stacey Ann Chin. Whoa, with my pubic hair.
But they're always trying to get rid of them anyway, the younger ones, right?
I know. I tell them they're going to fall out, and one day you're going to be like, you should have known me when it was down here.
That's the best Ooh, elevator pitch ever. We got into pubic hair. I mean, I didn't see it going there.
No.
But here we are.
I have a feeling we're not going to see it going a lot of places. I think we're just going to be on this roller coaster. Yeah. Here
well,
we go.
Tell us about your family and how you made your family.
I I grew up in Jamaica. Chinese, Jamaican man. And my mother, who was black, Chinese man, older, married, maybe had a little money, like third world money, as we say in the third world. But most of you can't say it because it's like a white person saying the N-word. It's like it's complicated.
Yeah,
to be,
don't
you know
do
what
that.
I mean? Just don't talk about third world. I can say third world because I'm from Jamaica.
Yes.
Just to let you know parameters just there before we get
Thank you for
closer.
That.
And you call me something during sex and I have to like smack you. Oh. So, where was I?
So, it was after pubic hair into Jamaica.
So, you know, older man with a penchant for young, beautiful girls, young black girl, poor, and there is some kind of interaction between them, and I am born premature 6.5 months after the interaction. My mother left shortly after for Canada. My father did not claim me. And then I had a pretty interesting journey after that, like, you know, lots of abandonment, you know, things that happen to young kids in poor spaces that can be like difficult, you know, shit, I'm a girl, all the things you can imagine. Let your imagination run wild. Scribner did the memoir. So, you know, it's shit must have been fucked up because you're not going to be just like, oh, I'm a black girl and things went well and I have a memoir. So it's got to be shitty. So there were some shitty things. And then I turned out to be like a gay in Jamaica at university because I was there trying to like experimenting with ideas and, you know, like, oh my God, what if this thing is constructed and feminism 101 and it's so great. And that girl over there, she's wearing no bra and she smells so much like patchouli and she's listening to Sarah McLachlan.
Sarah McLachlan.
So it kind of became apparent to me that I was also a gay. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm in this place of great learning. So I immediately, you know, come to New York to find out about what gay people do, because I hear you guys have the lock on what we're supposed to do here as gay people. So I wanted to come and, like, you know, observe the gay in its natural habitat and then take some of the lessons back home to Jamaica. And then I kind of, like, came upon this, like, coming out of the closet phenomenon. And then I went back to Jamaica and came out of the closet. And it went so well the first time that I told everybody afterwards. And then it went all to hell to shit. And I got sexually assaulted by about a dozen boys in a dormitory bathroom on campus. And that made me say, hell fucking no, I'm not going to stay here. And so I came to the U.S. as an undocumented immigrant, and then found poetry, you know, kind of was angry. Because when I came here, it just kind of dawned on me that I was black. Because before that, I mean, I didn't really know because, you know, everybody black. Uh-huh. So it's not that much of an issue. Mm-hmm. It's only become an issue when most of you are white, which, you know. So then I came here and I just kind of needed somewhere to put all that angst, you know. And, you know, you're 22, 23, 24, you're full of angst, you know. You know, you're very... You know, your vagina is lubricated and you're angsty. That's kind of like the...
and the hair is still there.
The hair is still there.
The definition of being like in your 20s. So that's kind of what was happening with me. And I kind of happened upon the kind of beatniks, the kind of misfits in the Lower East Side. And became a poet and just kind of went... I was on Broadway and then I was on HBO and then I was like...
So you weren't a poet before coming to New York? You just found poetry?
I was always a lover of poetry. Of words. Mm-hmm. I was a student of literature. I did my first degree in biology, chemistry, physics, and math. And then, like...
As we don't do. It's for the best,
It felt very finite. Like, it wasn't that great. You know, like, I don't know. They all seemed like they knew everything over there. They weren't questioning much in the science department. And I loved stories. I loved literature, you know. I mean, I was a kid, 11 years old, screaming, "Unsex me here!" You know, or, you know, whispering to some poor, you know, some poor young person who was just trying to be cool as a teenager. And I'm like, "Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky, like a patient etherized upon a table." And she's like, "Fuck off, what are you doing?"
I like boys. I'm like,
"It's a poem." She's like, "Don't say it to me." So it's kind of like quick shot of my teenage years.
You do you. You've always done you.
Very much so. I mean, but also I had no parents. You know, I kind of was bouncing from home to home. And a lot of those homes were abusive. And so, I mean, the upside of abuse, if you want to, you know, phrase it like that, is that you don't have any allegiance to the people who... are raising you unless you get fucking Stockholm, which is like, you know, I didn't get it for some reason. But I didn't have any allegiances to anyone, so I could kind of do what I wanted and think what I wanted. I remember, you know, I got in trouble like at four to be asking like if angels wear brassieres, you know, like, you know, it's like, this was like steady, like really devout Christians. Mm-hmm. And here I am fucking trying to find out what was on it. The holy people's, you know, underwear is like...
not okay.
Can imagine.
Were they like, all just like, "What is wrong with you?"
I know. They were all very much like, "What is wrong with this child?" And there were moments when I was questioning what's wrong with me. But for some reason, I had like a tick. I couldn't really control it.
It's really interesting. I mean, you seem to have a really strong reserve within you, and you always have. And even the book, the book chronicles your childhood. Mm-hmm. And... The way it's narrated is you go along on this journey with you and you feel it through your eyes. Mm-hmm. And it's so moving and it's so heartbreaking at times.
Yeah. There was moments where I was like, "Oh God, please don't do it. Don't say it. Don't say it. Say it. Say it. She's going to say it. She said it."
Yes.
And then you'd be like in trouble.
Yes.
And trouble in your house was
very, very strong, religious.
Yes, yes, yes. Each chapter of the book is like, you know, it's like suffer the children or... God helps those, or my first masturbation is a scene. There's a little scene where I'm like 9 years old and I discover masturbation and fell into like an outhouse.
like you do.
To read it. but you know, like it's the flesh. I mean, like I'm very whatever I am, I cannot escape being a child of the religious experience.
Right.
You know, the way that I come to things that I'm passionate about reminds me of the way people came to Christ, people came to the church, that kind of like holy presence, untouchable. Like, you know, when I'm, you know, with a lover, it feels like that, you know, like kind of holy, kind of, you know.
How are you single? How is this woman single?
That's, you know, I think I have like a bunch of reasons, like all my exes. They can kind of like catch you up as to why I'm single. You were saying I seem so self-possessed, but those most of us who are so confident on stage, we save the lack of confidence for those we love most.
Right, really, truly.
Our wives are here. Sorry, guys.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah, Jimmy.
You know what bugs me?
Oh, God, here we go.
No, I'm serious. Bad jeans.
Oh.
There's nothing worse than uncomfortable jeans. I'm wearing these stupid jeans right now, and they are so tight on my big thighs, I can't take it.
You don't have big thighs.
I do.
I see they're a little tight. Thanks. I have a problem with the muffin top.
No, you don't. Those jeans fit you like gloves.
No, I don't have it right now because I found my fit jeans. Aren't they cute?
They are, actually.
And they're made of this ultra soft fabric called Flex Tech denim.
That sounds special.
It does. It breathes and it moves with you. And the material is so soft and stretchy that even if, Jamie, I happen to put on, you know, like 1 or 7 pounds
as
over the holiday break.
As you do.
These bad boys are going to adapt to my shape.
I love it.
They're going to stretch.
And best part, you're wearing sneakers with those jeans right now, mm-hmm. but you could easily dress them up with like a boot or like a 3-inch heel.
Jamie, I am not wearing 3-inch heels.
But you could.
Yes. No, I could.
They could. So basically they go with everything.
I know. But also the good news is that you can find your fit in just one of two sizes. Mm. There's size stunning, which fits regular sizes 2 through 12.
Stunning.
And size gorgeous, which fits regular sizes 14 to 20.
Gorgeous.
And guess what? They have a 60-day risk-free trial.
That's
so
great.
So if you're not fully satisfied, which would be absurd, you can return your jeans for a full refund, and then they'll cover the shipping.
I love
Isn't that amazing?
I love it. And right now, MyFit Jeans is offering our listeners an exclusive deal. You can buy one pair and get 15% off.
It's amazing.
And if you buy two, the second pair is 50% off.
Wow.
I know. Just go to myfitjeans.com and enter code OCT.
It's just like, it's the holidays. You want to get on this right now.
Yes.
And I'm just going to repeat this because this feels important.
Mm-hmm.
Go to myfitjeans.com and enter OCT to get 15% off your first pair of MyFit jeans. If you buy two, you'll get that second pair at how many percent off, Jamie?
50%.
50% off. Just use the code OCT for this unbelievable deal at
myfitjeans.com. I think I read somewhere you said you have made a commitment to living out loud, to being honest and truthful with who you are always.
You know, I was a liar.
Which backfires sometimes.
I was a crazy, like, crazy liar until I was about 15 because I would go to school and make up stories about what my real life was. So my mother wasn't writing to us from Canada. My father wasn't around, but I would tell everybody at school. Even though everyone at school knew the story, I would say like, oh yeah, my mom sent me something for Christmas. And Christmas Day was also my birthday. And so I would, you know, make up all these lies. And I would say that I lived one place and have my friend's father drop me at that house. And then I would kind of, once I fucking like went in and there was a dog. And then there was... and then I had the like remarkable... experience of being 16 years old and moving from one city to the next. And somewhere in that transition, I realized that I had the opportunity to no longer be looking over my shoulder and trying to remember who I told what. And so, you know, it's like, oh my God, this is
freedom.
Way too much work. I'm too lazy a thinker to be like, you know, trying to like do this lying thing full time on a wide scale. It wasn't the moral thing that bothered me. It was really the work it required to keep it going.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And so when my roommate said, so where are you from? I just said to her, like, well, I'm from Montego Bay, but my mother left me when I was born and my father didn't claim me. And, you know, none of them gives a shit about me. And so I'm here and I got a scholarship from, like, the man who says he's my father, but not really.
Oh, man.
And she requested to change rooms.
Oh.
But it was so freeing, you know, like at that moment,
felt
I was like, yo, I don't have to, because, you know, that story was going to go everywhere now about the crazy girl with all this shit. And so now I couldn't make up a lie to kind of try to cover that. So I kind of like pushed myself over the ledge of truth.
And then you were really there.
And then I'm an oversharer now, yes.
But it's freeing, right?
It is freeing. It has its, you know, it frees up some other things, but it ties up some other things too, if I'm really honest. You know, like my, as I said, the people close to me. And I even think about how I write so much about myself as a mom and Zuri's life. I wonder what she'll think. In 15, 20 years when she's an adult and all these stories about her
Do you ever have any feelings about that? About what you write and whether or not it's okay to share? Because you also have like a
piece. Yeah, I worry about her reading it.
No, but I mean about sharing about her.
Oh, yes, for sure. I worry.
Do you have like boundaries of what you share, won't share?
Yes. Now, I mean, she's almost 7, so she's very involved now. No, it's not like before, you know, she's, when I take a picture, she goes, let me see it.
It's on my good side.
And then approval. She goes, you can put that one. Oh, and I'm like, okay, why?
Oh,
and
the
she
children,
goes,
right?
No, because I get to choose. So, I mean, and then as she gets older, like pieces of her, like, you know, whether she like, you know, is potty trained or whether she is, you know, whether she's mispronouncing a word or whether she's saying fuck in the salon, like all of those are stories that don't really matter to her because she's like 3 or 4 or 5, you know. But I think when you start getting into 8, then I think she has a right to say which stories should go out into the world. And that's a very interesting thing because I've resisted it with lovers in the past where they're like, you can't fucking write. And I'm like, how dare you? This is my work.
This is my art. Yeah. Yes, your life is my art.
You're in an abusive relationship with a child now. Yes. So
who has the power.
You do what she says.
Well, I do. What, can we back up a little and ask about your single mom by choice?
Yeah, this is If These Ovaries Could Talk, Let's Be Truthful From Your Ovaries.
Yes, yes.
From your ovaries. Yeah. Leave her ovaries out of this.
You know, I wanted to have, you know, people. The question comes up all the time. Why didn't you adopt or, you know, blah, blah. All of those other questions. Why did you decide to like go and make a child, as they say in Trinidad?
Like it's a selfish thing to do.
Well, it kind of is, but it's okay, I think, to be selfish. I mean, men are selfish all the time and nobody gives them shit about it.
Right.
The poor two guys in our audience. It's just going to keep coming,
but
so just
sit
low.
The men who are here, though, if they're here, they could take it.
You're good guys.
That's true.
Yeah.
When they're at an ovary show, for God's sake.
To see, like the lesbian who they probably know will talk about her pubes.
In fairness, I think a lot of people didn't think we were going there, in fairness. But we're here, so we just got to roll with it.
Okay, now that I think about it, maybe pubes was...
I'm glad we went there. I'm glad.
I feel free by it. Everyone feels good with the pubes?
Good. We're good.
See, we're all in.
Why not?
What are they going to do? They're trying to be supportive.
Sure. But Stacey, and that's our whole thing is don't give them any room.
Right, you love us, right?
Yeah. Come on. See?
So, I mean, I've wanted to have a relationship with someone who had a biological connection with me that was positive for a really long time. You know, I wanted to have someone who looked like me that I could look at them and not feel like so much shit about where I was from and who loves me and who doesn't love me and who left me. And so I know that, you know, for my own sanity, that was a direction I wanted to at least attempt to go. Mm. And so... You know, I looked up and, you know, I was kind of waiting around like, you know, you think about how heteronormative we are. No matter how much of the mantle we throw off, we're still kind of. So there's a way that in my brain I was kind of looking for like the woman who would kind of like stand in for the man in the heteronormative narrative. And for a long time, you know, people would come and then we would start. I remember one girl, like we went to do the health insurance that would put me on her health insurance and in August, and then she left me in September.
Oops.
And then there's another one who was like, yeah, we should do it. And then she just stopped talking to me and then she told someone else that she was going to have a baby, man. I didn't want to have a baby.
So you started out with the whole baby talk.
You could tell me. And then my last partner before Zuri was born left actually during the IVF process. Oh. Like, she left me the morning I was, you know, she was supposed to drive me to go get the eggs
to the clinic.
Uh-huh. So, like, I'm swollen.
Somebody
with
has
the,
to take you home.
The possibility of family.
Right? That's and a way to say it.
I just need somebody to, like, drive the fucking car. They're going to put me under. They're going to pull out the fucking eggs with a straw. And then all your job is to just, like, sit there and then take me home
take
after.
You home.
But she's like, I can't do this. I cannot do this. I'm like, you could do this today and then you could leave me tomorrow.
Let's just get through today.
Because this fucking, like,
I still need
IVF
a ride.
Shit is not cheap.
No,
and
it is not.
And it is very time sensitive. You know what I mean? Like, them eggs is like real eggs making scrambled eggs. You can't, there's no moment that you have. If you let it sit there, then you get trash. You know what I mean? Like,
not going to work.
Yeah, and all that, you know, for I mean? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, when you, with this person, you started the process with her, was there a clear delineation that this was going to be your baby? She was just going to be someone you dated? Or did you not talk about that?
I have to take responsibility here.
I like, good for you.
That, you know, from the time I was maybe like 33, 34, I was like, and I had the kid when I was 39. Everybody who came along, you know, everybody came through the, like, the vagina train in my house, you know, had, like, it was like, I'm having a baby. If you want to come along and then it ends up being like a good match for you, but where I'm having a baby, like, we on this side having a baby and you could come along. And since then I've had, like, you know, deep post relationship conversations with these women. And essentially they're like, it just seemed like, you know, you were always going to have a baby and I would.
It was just about the baby.
It was just about you. I mean, like, whatever was going on, it was going to be you and this baby. And, you know, I could come along and carry a stroller if I wanted, mm-hmm. but it was not going to be like another parent. And if I'm honest, like, I really kind of dig the, you know, she and I are in it together mm-hmm. kind of feel. And I've struggled since then with other lovers to kind of make the family, like, blend with someone else, because we have such a sweet fucking balance. Mm. You know, we fight just
right. You have
right.
all the power, too.
Yeah.
One or parent means, like, I don't have to check in with anybody. I
know.
I don't have to.
When I'm going across borders and they look at the birth certificate, Mary. They're like, where's the other parent? I said, do you see another parent on the birth certificate? They're like, no. I'm like, yeah. All the parents are here. And sometimes I hear, you know, like, you know, people having, like, ex drama with the baby, like, all kind. And even people who remain together and have really great relationships, I hear some of the arguments they're having, and we don't have it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If Zuri can make a case for it, even if I'm against it, if she can make a case for it, we'll go for it. We don't have a third person who we have to vet or try to, like,
yeah,
you know,
that's hard. You have to, like, want, you're not supposed to have that fight in front of the kids. Yeah. You're supposed to, and I'm saying supposed to, because mm-hmm. half the time we're like, that's my turn. It's like you're supposed to wander off and you're supposed to be, you know, grown ups and then come back with a divided, you know, a united front.
It's hard. Or in my case, I'll if it's something I know that she's not supposed to do, but I'm just too tired, I say, well, why don't you go ask mommy? Which is not fair either.
But you do pay for it, though.
Yes.
I mean, the singleness. I mean, you pay for that power that you have, that freedom that. It comes with, like, tremendous responsibility. And, like, I look at, I already see where, you know, I'm the god of her world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes a kid needs someone to be like, she fucking crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the other person can agree with them, you know. But, like, when you're, like, the all-power person, you're the person who makes the decisions, pays the rent, you decide what time we're leaving, you decide whether we can go to this thing or not. Sometimes the kid can't step back and see that, like you on some shit just now. You, like, you know, like you're feeling yourself, like you're just masturbating on your own power just now. And kids, when they have siblings and when they have another parent, sometimes even just the look or even just recognizing that the other person is looking at your mom like, like that can kind of affirm their feelings about
that. Straight up happens in our house all the time. Like, they're always like, Mary will be like, you're losing it when I start getting, like, really angry, which never happens. and then I'll see the kids look to her to see, like, and they're all, like, trying to take temperature to see how insane I am in that moment.
Mm.
And when I see that look on everybody's face, I'm like, I should probably step away.
Yes, but you don't. Mm-hmm. You don't have that.
And then I don't.
You don't have that when you're.
I wish I did.
And you are in charge. You have to make the rules, and you have, because there's nobody else to bounce off of either. Mm-hmm. So there is no relief for you.
None at all.
You're gonna have to be the crazy person in the moments when you have to be the crazy person.
And you have to be the crazy person. You have to be like the sane person,
right?
Like the fun person.
When you say something that hurts the kid, you gotta like fucking Jekyll and Hyde it real quick. Like go to the bathroom and be like, Stacey Ann Chin,
get yourself out
together and go talk to the child. That was fucked up.
It's hard.
All right.
That is, you know, that is one of the hardest things to do, to snap out of it. Because when you're pissed, you are pissed.
Yes. Whereas if another parent would come in and be like, I got you for a second, and then like it can cool down and you can come back and apologize to the kid. But like, and sometimes you really don't have that much of a window to come and apologize, especially to a small child when you hurt their feelings, because it's so big when they're so little, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the guilt lasts
forever.
Forever.
Like a lifetime.
I'm still feeling guilt from yesterday. It'll last like a week.
That doesn't sound like a lifetime to me, Jamie. That sounds like you're good. That sounds
because
a week.
Only because there'll probably be another incident, and then I'm guilty about that one, not this one. This
perpetual
one will be
guilt
under the rug, you know. Or my wife will be the one, and then, you know.
I'm so envious of the both of you with my wife and my wife.
By the way, ask both our wives.
I could have had a wife and happy. Nobody's asked me yet, but I could have had a wife. Maybe I could have asked somebody. They might have said yes.
Yeah.
I bet they would have.
I bet so.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I feel like what we're setting up as our next social media challenge is like, we're going to give away a date with Stacey Ann Chin. No, we're going to give away a wedding with Stacey Ann Chin.
Yes.
You're thinking way bigger than our britches.
Stacey Ann Chin. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, and dating is like, talk about dating when people know you. Mm. You know, I just get wet when people are like, so what do you do? I'm like, you have no idea what I do.
Right.
I'm in love, you know, like, cause people come with their shit. Like, even if they don't know anything about you, but then, they know that you have like a public, they're like, yeah, they have ideas about you that don't fit. Or you fail them. You know, how many of your icons have you met and they've just failed you? Because, you know, we're failures. We're humans, you know? Mm. By definition, we're like deep fucking failures.
It's true.
That's why we like to set the bar really low. Because we feel like that way we're just going to like, if we do anything good, it's
also,
like, great.
Also, we don't know what that feels like because nobody knows who we are.
It's really true. It's really true.
Like, totally good.
That's really probably not true.
I got recognized twice.
Very strange people. I'm sure you have people who just like follow you to watch the strangeness.
We are super weird.
Yeah. We are weird. Wait, but that's okay.
Can we talk about you go ahead, Jamie.
Well, I want to take it to your decision, like making Zuri.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a lot of pieces in the HuffPost that I read where you talk about.
Didn't you and I use the same doctor
the
to
same,
make or?
We did. We went to the same
people's
New York Fertility Services.
Yes. Dr. B.
Dr. B. We did.
Yeah.
And I was reading your story and I was realizing, oh my God, it's the same doctor. How funny.
Yep.
But you talk so well about being gay, and it, all of a sudden showing up pregnant, but also being single. Mm-hmm. And showing up pregnant in your building.
So yeah, so there's a couple of things that happened when I got pregnant.
Yeah.
Number one, like I moved into Crown Heights when it wasn't sexy. In like 2001, I moved into Crown Heights.
Mm-hmm.
And most people there had not really had any real experience with like a gay, you know? So like I'm walking around and I'm like out, you know what I mean? Out on television, out on Broadway, just being gay, you know what I mean? Like I'm a practicing lesbian. Publicly practicing lesbian. And then so for like maybe 10 years I work on these people, like, you know, I'm charming, do you know what I mean? Like I'm in the elevator, I make sure I smell good, like I say good morning, like the old ladies, I lift bags, all kind of shit, bags are filled with all kind of things, just lift them up and like, yeah, let them go first, like all kinds of shit. I work hard at being like a good neighbor so that people would know that a gay could be a good, right?
Representing
for the whole community.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm representing. I'm like standing up for all the dykes out here.
Thank you for that.
Trying to like push the movement forward in Crown Heights.
Thank you for that. Thank you
for
that.
And so like everyone like gets to like me, you know, they're Caribbean. Like we, you know, very jocular. We're making jokes, you know, they all kinds of shit. Now the old ladies are like flirting with me. I'm like, you know, you really shouldn't be wearing that dress. You know, it's way too short. You're going to make me have inappropriate conversation with you. And they're like dying and blushing. It's all very sweet. And then I show up pregnant and then they're just super confused.
Right.
Because, you know, like, I'm like
they just got there with
doubt
you.
Gay. Like, yes. You know what I mean? Yeah. No gray area gay. Do you know what I mean? Like, I am not slightly gay. I'm not partly gay. I'm like super gay.
You're out right? there.
And they're just looking and they want to ask, but it's the kind of thing that no one, they don't really want, did you have a penis in you? Is that where you went?
Yeah.
Like, right. Did you change your mind about the whole vajayjay thing? Like,
you can see,
but
the
you
questions.
Can see it in their face.
Yes,
you can see it.
Yeah.
It's not till the third drink at a cocktail party where people go, I didn't want to ask. Who had the baby?
But it's so funny because when we first got pregnant, my wife got pregnant first, I was worried about the neighbors in the building. I had this whole like, oh God, what are they going to think? She's going to all of a sudden have a belly. We're going to have to, because it's that thing where you know they're wanting to know.
And then they don't think IVF. They think that you went somewhere and fucked a man.
Right.
And cheated, a one night stand in a bar. All of us have such dramatic lives. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We're like, no, we don't know.
We're living
know.
It up.
Yeah. But and then, so there were a bunch of ways that I had to come out. And then, then you have the baby, and then people are like, now people who don't know you and know you're gay, they assume you straight. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, you know, being a procreating woman, you kind of get into this in club. People get very excited, like you've finally done the thing you were made to do, as opposed to like all of this carpet munching that you've been doing all these years. You know what I mean? So you've like, you know, fulfilled your purpose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they imagine some man rotting on you. Like, they, you know, it's all great now because now they don't have to deal with your gayness, you know?
I just snorted, FYI. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, then it's weird. Like, it's this thing, like, people look at her and they're like, and then she got to come out about the donor. You know, she had a whole conversation the other day with the five-year-olds in her class last year. You know, one parent called me like, excuse me, my daughter came home and was telling me about uterus and sperm.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were like, she heard it from your daughter. I'm like, yeah. I mean, did she explain it right?
Good for you.
You know, she also disabused all the other kindergartners of the fairy, the tooth fairy, and Santa as well. I know.
She's living like you. Honest.
Yeah.
Out there.
Can we ask about your donor? Do you talk about that publicly?
Yes, we are. You know, the other interesting thing, you know, all of you biblical heads in the audience.
I don't know if there are that many here.
All of you Jesus freaks, you Jesus BFFs.
They're watching on the live stream. They're probably not here. Shout out to Jesus. I don't know, that is just, it
not,
felt right.
Not
felt
that
right.
We have anything against people who love Jesus.
Oh,
no.
I
oh,
mean.
Jamie.
I mean, I don't. Like, you know, as long as you're not, like, trying to get me to give Jesus head, you know, because, I mean.
Oh, hey. Like, yeah.
I'm not interested.
Oh, you can get some mail.
But you can go ahead and participate in that if you would like. And I fight for your right to do that.
Sure.
You know, like, that's the kind of activist I am. I'm, you know, if you want to, you know, do whatever, then
you do. You
whatever.
Do you.
But the whole, like.
The donor.
The donor.
We got this, guys. We got it.
When I came to the U.S. and I was undocumented for a couple of years, I married a gay man and we were going to make family together. And like he had the sperm and I had the
like
uterus.
Legitimate married?
Yes.
Oh, to get your green card. Well, I mean, well, should we not say that on air?
I think it's fine.
It's fine.
I think that
somebody's getting arrested. Damn.
The issue is that they have to prove that you didn't want to be a family.
Oh.
Because they can't not give you a green card because you're not fucking the guy. They have to not give it to you because they think that your relationship is false. And this guy, I mean, he and I were essentially a family. I lived at home with his mom in Far Rockaway. Like, I, you know, everybody knew he was my husband. Everybody knew I was his wife. his mother and I are still very close. Like we, you know, I was married to him for many, many, many years. Mm. And we were going to make babies together. We just were going to give the, you know, we're just going to have him jack off to Dr. B. And yeah. then, you know, mix it with my eggs and then voila, omelette.
It's a modern family.
You know, yes, essentially mm-hmm, we were going to make the modern family. And we were trying to do something essentially like radical and, you know, rewrite the whole narrative for family. Mm-hmm. And then he got cancer and he died.
Oh, oh
I know.
Sorry.
Like he was diagnosed in May and he was dead in December. Ugh. And so then I had to be like hunting for sperm after that because, you know, my sperm tap had crossed over into the netherworlds.
But you were trying to make a family for a very long time.
If yes.
That, you know,
yes.
this was thinking not about it. Just
no,
came
it was
you.
Not. Yeah. I mean, I knew, I, you know, part of my healing process, I knew for the tragedy that happened with my own family was that I wanted to make a family with whom I could have a relationship. That, you know, I love that she looks like me. Mm-hmm.
It's like you're breaking the cycle is what it feels you know? Like.
Yeah. And so when he died, you know, I spent like a couple of years like chasing sperm. Mm. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember being on a flight to LA when I was like checking my ovulation and looking down the aisle going like, that guy has great teeth. I could go fuck him in the bathroom. I could just like lie there. I could just, you know, I'm sure I could make the sounds.
Oh my goodness.
You know what I mean? I could, he could, you know, he, you know, whatever. I could just make him feel like it's all great. And then he would just come and I would get pregnant.
Right. And it would happen like that.
Like
so
that,
easily.
Because it's always so,
so easy.
And like, you just throw some sperm and it just catch me in the forehead and I'm pregnant.
forehead. I don't think it works that way.
But isn't that what we all thought for a very long time?
It has to get in your eye.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
There's a rise in gonorrhea of the eye. Could figure out why. So on to the topic at hand. So, and like 10 years later, I mean, 10 years after he died, when I still hadn't had the sperm, I'm still very close to my brother-in-law, his younger brother at the time, who's maybe like 15 or 10 years younger than he is. I was talking to, we call him Baba now, so because he's Zuri's Baba. I was talking to him and he goes, and I was like, oh my God, man, if Peter hadn't died, I would fucking have like sperm coming out of my ears now. And
literally.
And he no. And he goes, yeah, I'm sorry about that. And he goes like, why not use mine?
Oh.
And so my mother-in-law is my kid's grandmother.
Oh.
And all my sister and brother-in-laws are Zuri's aunt and uncles.
Oh, that's
and
really sweet.
And my brother-in-law who donated the sperm is Baba.
And, wow. you're close.
And we're obviously. Close. I mean, you know, I took 14 of them, the whole family, to Jamaica last Christmas. I mean, like, we you know, we're an odd bucket of people, but we make it work. You know, mm-hmm. we are human and we fuck up and we love each other and we try to make it work out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's the shit that life is made of, right?
It's
every day,
easy.
I mean, y'all are out here in this rain.
And when did you tell Zuri her story? Right away?
She's always known, like, as long as we've known, like, you know, and she will tell you, my sperm came from Baba and my egg came from my mom. And then the doctor put them together and like whisked them around. And then they put the egg back in my mom in her uterus.
Good for her.
Atta girl.
Yes. And then she says, I was in there for like 9 months.
Like 9 months.
And the doctor could have like cut me out or I could come out through the vagina. But I wouldn't come out through the vagina, maybe because it was like icky. And so he had to cut the thing and like he pulled me out. And when I came out, I didn't cry. And he was like, why isn't she crying? But then I didn't have anything to cry about.
Oh my God. She's so sweet.
She's a good kid.
God.
She's a good
and
kid.
Smart.
Oh, I have to show you her card that she gave me
yeah,
today.
Yeah, this.
Probably because she was like shit to me yesterday. It says, from Zuri to Mama. Yay, Mama! And it opens the wrong way. But it says, thank you. Thank you for all the love. You make me happy when I'm sad. I found this evening because she whispered to me at school this morning that she left something on the bed for me. And it says, thank you. This is my favorite part. Thank you for eating the skin on the apple peel.
It's so sweet.
And the penmanship.
It's really neat. And the pictures are really well
but
drawn,
But I like in
too.
The back how she did like a little, it almost looks like a greeting card, how she put you two in a heart
in
the back. It's like she already has, maybe she should be in marketing.
Yes. And you know, I literally didn't see it until I was like, oh shit, she told me to look for something on the bed. So I went in because I've been sick all day. I went in and I was like, yeah,
she's... And then it makes it all better.
She's nice, abusive. Like, you've treated me like shit and then you draw me a picture and then I'm like, I have to cry all day.
It's so hard. It's so hard. But we love them. Love them.
What else are we going to do?
Oh, and your family is just, it's so beautiful. And like, so the whole point of this podcast is these stories need to be told. Our stories need to be normalized.
But you know, most people are having an abnormal experience.
Like, How do you mean?
Most people's lives don't fit like the Cosby, obviously. The Cosby.
Well.
And, you know, or the, you know, eight is enough shit, or like... Like, most people aren't having those on TV stories. Nope. Like, I don't know anyone who was like, yeah, my mom and dad loved each other and there was never any issue. And, you know, but most people are like...
But that ideal is still held up. Like, it's the norm. Like,
you know,
it's
why? The patriarchy.
Mm-hmm. Like, I need to get into that a little bit.
Yeah, it's really about, like, preserving this idea that keeps everyone in the hierarchy so that... You know, the people at the top can remain at the top. You know, like, you know, what if women didn't feel like they needed to be married? Mm. Like, what the fuck would happen to the world?
That was like a mic drop moment.
You know, I mean, you know, what if, I don't know, like, what if people didn't feel like they needed to live how it was prescribed for them? Would you have gone and done the degree that you did? Would you be in the job that you're in? Most people don't want to be doing a lot of the things that they're supposed to be doing. And I find, like, you know, I have to do a lot of things I'm supposed to, but my life becomes, like, magical when I step off of the beaten track a little bit and do something different.
You know, we talk a lot about, in a way, how lucky we are that we don't have to have set roles. Mm-hmm. Because we're two women, it's like, well, people will say, well, who is the dad and who's the, and it's like, sometimes, like, I pay the bills because I'm the math person. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm words, Mary's pictures, you know, it's like, so we, and she does the dishes, I maybe sometimes put them away, not usually, but it's like, so
it's,
we don't,
fluid.
There's no,
our roles are more,
yeah,
fluid.
There's no, and we're lucky in that
way.
Yeah,
there's, you know, yeah, yeah. Except that sometimes we kind of do a mock version of what existed before. But yes, mm-hmm. for sure, we have more room to play with who we are and to have who we are show up mm-hmm. in the moment that is needed.
Well, it can be whoever's best at the thing.
Yes, whoever is best, or whoever doesn't want to do it least.
Right. Which happens
see
a lot
earlier
in my
regarding
house.
The dishes. I don't want to do it.
And my wife folds clothes the best.
Here she goes with the whole wife shit again.
I'm sorry.
We're just like taunting you at this point, right? I'm telling you, we're going to have a giveaway.
Yeah, my wife also folds clothes.
We believe you. We believe you. Yeah. But, you know, as a gay family with gay, being a gay mom, you have to come out over and over and over again.
Yes,
it
like every grade.
It never ends. You're always coming out. And you're always saying, oh, not my husband, my wife. And you have, and I've learned recently, because I'm a newer mother, my oldest is almost 5, and I've learned recently that I have to empower the coming out. I have to put power behind the word lesbian when I say I'm a lesbian, because I need my daughter to be proud of the fact mm-hmm. that I'm a lesbian, as opposed to how I might have 10 years ago said, oh yeah, lesbians, you know?
But
I might
everybody
have whispered
in an LGBT
it.
Family has to come out. All the time.
All like, the time.
Every day, Zuri has to, you know, say, that's not my father, it's my donor. Mm-hmm. And she has to say, I don't have a dad, or I only have my mom at home, or like all day long. And, you know, it's heartbreaking sometimes when she comes and she goes, I wish I had a dad. And I go, why do you wish you had a dad? And she goes, then I wouldn't have to like tell everybody that I didn't have a dad.
Mm-hmm. It'd be different.
Like, you know, that's the thing. It's not like not having the dad is not the real issue, but being in a world where having the dad is normal.
Yeah, my daughter does that. My daughter also, when she gets mad at us, we'll start crying and screaming. And yeah, and I wanted a dad. I didn't want two moms. And I didn't want a dog. I wanted three cats. So you know, you take it with a grain of salt, but it's heartbreaking.
Because you're not having three cats.
No, we're not it's having too many three cats. I don't like cats. We have a dog. You got a dog.
What kind of lesbian doesn't like cats?
Exactly.
I like outdoor cats. They got to be kind of rugged. I don't know. Anyway, we're going in a weird place.
You cats will live on Fifth Avenue while we live inside.
At the deli next door.
No, but it is a heartbreaking thing the first time your child says, why don't I have a dad? Or I wish I had a dad. Then
you
really
read it as a personal failure.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I honestly, like, I being selfish, I guess I'm selfish. When we decided to make this family, I never thought the child was going to miss the dad. Mm-hmm. I never even thought about it, which is probably a major character flaw on my part.
Which is quite normal, I think, for parents. Because, I mean, straight or gay, this is where it becomes quite, you know, run-of-the-mill sort of, like,
right.
you don't really anticipate specific problems with your kid, you
right
know, like,
totally,
you know. I didn't think that I would have like a rule keeper in my house. Like I imagined raising this like rebel who was gonna like do everything and whatever. Like, she's like, mom, you're not supposed to be driving in this lane.
Uh-oh.
I'm a lesbian immigrant. I can drive in this lane. It's reparations.
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 But she's such a rule keeper. Like, you know, the whole party will be dead in a second because she's like, listen, this one had a turn, this one had a turn, and it's this one's turn, and this one. Jesus Christ. But this, you know, like, I thought that I would be raising this kid who would like break all the rules and like smash everything. Nope.
No, you get the opposite.
She don't want to cut the line. She don't want to do nothing.
Maybe you just make it really safe for her so she doesn't have to. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe, but it's like shit to experience every day. It's like,
do you ever think about, you come from a childhood that's not amazing? Because I don't know if that's a great way to say it. That's how I say about my childhood. It was not amazing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I sometimes think about my kids and, like, I'd like to think we're doing a really good job. I mean, I'd like to think that. And I sometimes wonder, will they not have anything to grow against? Do you ever worry about that? Like, maybe you're making it. I mean, I don't know if this
that sounds like, you know, you're just worried about being like the perfect parent.
Well, I don't think we're going to have to worry
right,
about
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
as my kid, a lot of people here could probably attest to, I'm not.
My kid is not going to be like, oh, you know, like one of my, you know, fucking trigger stories is I loved school and I couldn't go to school for a whole week because we didn't have any undies for me to wear to school and nobody could buy them. There was no money for it. So I was like at home for like a week and missing all this good stuff happening at school because I didn't have drawers. You know, but
don't you think you
came
out
many,
of that?
No, everybody relax. I have a lot of them now.
Even if you didn't, I wouldn't care.
But
yep.
But you know, and so and I was always the kid getting hand-me-downs, you know, like I was a skinny kid wearing everybody else's clothes, like, you know, and sometimes kids from church would be like, oh yeah, I had that dress last year and Stacey Ann's wearing it. It just was shitty on a number of levels. And my kid, like, I remember Cynthia Nixon's kid is about a year older than Zuri, and he gave Zuri a shirt. And it like holes on it in it and stains in it. And you know, my fucking like traumatized ass is like, Mike is not going to wear that shirt. Because mm-hmm. it like, you know, she's not allowed to get Frozen because Frozen is like, you know, the white girl heaven. And, you know, she's a brown girl. So I work hard to give her like images of brown girls. So I'll be like, mm-hmm. no, you can wear Olaf, but that's it.
Olaf? I mean, really, Olaf is the best part of that movie anyway. Yeah. So.
So, you know, you could wear the moose, but, you know, no, these fucking, like, you know, super white girls from, like, Scandinavia. Hell fucking no. So then she gets a secondhand hand-me-down fucking, like, Frozen shirt with the two girls on it, and she is just, like, on fleek happy. And then she's wearing the shirt every day with the stains and the holes and I'm like dying. And then, you know, like every day I'm trying to hide it, trying to give it away. And then one day I just said to her, like, why do you want to wear this shirt? It's so ratty. And she said, you know, when I put it on, it just reminds me of my friend. And, you know, when it's like he's giving me a giant hug every time I put it on.
Oh, my God.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, she ain't got none of the shit I have.
Yeah. Right.
But that's kind of, but you're parenting from your own pain, even yeah. as you try mm. not to. You can't help but parent from like your places of pain. Mm-hmm. So I'm mm-hmm. always looking for like trying to get Zuri to like feel so loved and so listened to and so seen. And she's like, back the fuck up off of me. I know you see me. Just get off me for a second. I know you see me. Just give me a minute. Like that is her response. So I'm sure I'm on my own therapist couch going like, my mama never loved me. And she's going to be like, she loved me too much.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just wanted some space.
Yeah, yeah, like our job is to like, you know, impart to our kids as much as we can, how much we love them and do whatever we can, the best we can. And I forgave so much of the people who were caring for me as a kid because when I became a parent, I realized this shit is hard, man, especially if nobody gave you a roadmap. Mm. Like my aunt who was beating the shit out of me all the time, she was doing it because she thought the more she beat me, the less likely I was that I was going to go have sex with some boy and get pregnant and my life would be shit. Like it's all like traceable. And if you can like, this is why, who's in therapy? Raise your hand. That's what I'm saying. You should go to therapy. You should go. I mean, it's as important as brunch. And condoms.
And brunch.
And, you know, it like, you know, it's so important. Like all this shit that you New Yorkers get up to. You don't even have to go every day. You can go like once every 2 months, mm-hmm. you know, and budget for it. Like mm-hmm. therapy is like a paid best friend. It's like somebody whose only job is to listen to your shit and help you solve it. They can't even talk about their own shit.
Yeah, they really can't.
And it's the only place where you find it's easier to admit you're wrong because this person has no judgment for you. Mm. Go to therapy, guys.
If there's like, anything you learn from our podcast.
Without therapy, I wouldn't have survived. I wouldn't have been able to like laugh. Mm. I wouldn't have been able to like have sex, you know, and have an orgasm and, you know, help other people have orgasms. Like none of that would have been possible.
That's God's work
therapy,
right there.
You know, like, you know, your own health, you know. That's I don't important. Know. Go to therapy, man.
Go to therapy,
Save
guys.
Save me.
Well, I have a question for you about you in one of your essays from the Huffington Post. Obviously, we read a lot of them.
We're
just
going
to keep referring to them all
once.
Week. But you talked about Zuri had just been born and you wondered if you were going to ever be in a relationship again and if you would have balance. Do you feel like now that
feel
she's
like
almost
I'm having
seven,
that moment now as well? Yeah.
Do you feel like you're have balance or getting balance?
Oh,
are
yes.
You dating?
I mean, she's almost seven, so now she's not like... Number one, she's not pulling at my nipple anymore, which was very difficult to like have the child pulling at one nipple and somebody else trying to pull at the other one.
I can see how
and
that
then
would
you're
be
just
hard.
Like resisting like, everybody leave my nipples alone. I don't want anybody touching my nipples. None of the two of you. Do you remember those times for those of you who had babies?
Yeah.
You were like, get
yeah,
off
it's
me.
It's rough. It is not. It's no joke.
Yes, I just want to hold you. I don't want nobody holding me. Mm. I want to hold my own fucking self for a second.
I felt that way about pregnancy. I was like, get out.
Pregnancy
I wanted my
was
body
hard.
Back.
Yes.
Yes.
I was like, you're invading me.
And those people who talk about these beatific
they
fucking
are
liars.
They are like, bold-faced liars.
And vagina swells up.
Oh,
you get hair in places that you didn't know it
that
could
did
grow.
Not happen
you're
to
sick.
Me.
You know, it's terrible. Like, you know, and then it moves inside of you. It yeah, sits tough. On your
and
fucking
under your ribs and the punching and
bladder.
The
bladder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have 5 drops of pee in your bladder and you're like urgently need
it
to go.
It goes so bad.
Really?
It's hard.
Stop the car, I have to pee. And it's like drip, 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 drip.
Yeah.
I'm done now. It's like really.
Yeah, I remember on my second, I went to the bathroom and I went to the doctor and I said, is this baby, it was like 4 or 5 months. I said, is this baby coming early? Because I think it's falling out. And she was like, that's your second. I was like, that's not right. It was like falling out. I was like, the kid's going to walk out. It's not. None of that is right.
I labored for 23 hours. I was on bed rest for 6 months. Bleeding. Ooh. I went to the hospital 26 times. It was a horrible pregnancy. I was allergic to the child.
She had a rough pregnancy.
And then she came out and like, it's been like, where's the wood?
My head.
This gotta be.
Yeah.
Somebody knock wood.
I mean, it, you know, I don't know. She's an easy kid so far. I mean, like we have huge arguments, but I like those arguments. I mean, they breed a kind of conversation between her and I that mm-hmm. could be good. You know, but she might end up, I don't know. This is, parenting is a giant fucking experiment. Nobody knows how to do it right.
And it's mm-mm. very hard. But the thing that can be said about all the families that we speak to is all of these families that we have created are intentional families. Mm-hmm. And we are doing our gosh darn best.
Go ahead, Jamie. Say it.
We are doing our best to make these families homes of love and create beautiful people out of them. And that can't be said for every family out there.
And I practice the art of saying sorry. I drop to my knees all the time and I say sorry because I want to get into the habit of saying it now so that when she's a teenager and I don't feel like saying it, that I'm already practiced. You know, but
because you're not really sorry when she's a teenager.
Because we mess up. And, you know, this hierarchy between adults and children is often set up to perpetuate the falsehood that adults don't make mistakes. Mm. And we make them all the time. It's just that we have the power to not admit it. You know, so I'm apologizing and I have a therapy fund for the child.
That's smart. I think sorry is one of the most important words in the language. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to say sorry quickly and easily. Mm-hmm. It's not hard.
But also like to try to clean it up. That's the thing. Like there's some actually people here from this organization that I've worked with called Youth at Risk. And they walked us through this apology process where it's not enough to just say, I'm sorry. You have to say, what's it like? Tell me what you need from me to clean it up. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I'm not always able to practice it, but
it's hard.
It's the difference between someone just saying sorry, just to say sorry, and then just repeating it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I think that's important.
I don't know if I do that enough. I should start practicing, like, what can I do to make it up to you? Or what can I do to fix it? Or
because they might just be like, nothing, I'm good.
You wanna ask me about it. Like, but I'm, you know, I've been like working on saying sorry because
it's important.
Yeah.
I think as a parent, you have to say sorry, like, all the time.
Yeah, and so that, like, they're going to say things to you later on that they're going to recognize that you did wrong, that you didn't even know you did wrong. And you have to be able to be like, I didn't see that. I didn't know that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, now that I know, if I could do it differently, I would, or understand how you would feel that way. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I just know that. You know, I just try not to be like this know-it-all, which I am most of the time with her. Like, I don't know everything and I make mistakes. And will you forgive me a lot? Because then, you know, we practice the art of forgiving each other because love is, you know, requires forgiveness. Mm-hmm. That's how all these motherfuckers stay too long together, all these wives. You gotta keep saying sorry and forgive people because nobody's perfect, you know, they fuck up all the time.
Yeah, we all fuck up all the time, constantly.
Yeah,
well, we wanted to see if our audience has any questions for Stacey and Chin. No pressure, but
you don't have to. I mean, you know. No pressure whatsoever.
There's a person with a microphone that's walking around.
We talked about so much.
Did we, though?
I know. Yeah, I feel like we really imparted some knowledge.
We didn't bring it back to Oprah, which is disappointing.
See, here we are, Oprah.
I had a moment. I almost said it, but I didn't want to. Yeah, I was already doing the wife thing a lot, so. You know.
No questions?
Oh, we got a microphone over there.
Oh, there are two. Two questions. No, go ahead.
Hi. I am here with my daughter.
Oh my God, I'm sorry to hear.
So I have my own and my partner, so not always child appropriate, but you've talked a lot.
We didn't know there was going to be kids.
No, but you actually spoke about speaking your truth and really inviting her into a lot of conversation, so I'm, you know, pretty excited to have her with me. But you also spoke about your daughter's coming out. Mm-hmm. And I wanted you to talk a little bit more about that experience. We've talked a lot in our family about our daughter's coming out, mm-hmm. and I'm curious to hear a little bit more about how she feels about it, particularly in school.
Do you want to add a question?
You want to add something? To it?
Okay.
If you want, I mean, don't feel like you have to.
Okay.
All right. coming out, you know, I feel like in her class, there's the assumption, at least from everybody, that everybody's got a mom and dad. And she has to consistently say, I don't have a dad all the time, because the assumption is that she has a dad. And so people, you know, say these things to her all the time. About, oh, yeah, my dad. What does your dad do? Or a lot of the storybooks, you know, are about like moms and dads. I mean, even fucking bears and raccoons, like, you know, they have this heteronormative idea do. Of them.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's they're true. All, you know, the father, the daddy raccoon is always there and like paying mad child support. And so she has to do that all the time. But a lot of it is really just navigating the world that it's less about what she needs to say to any specific person, but hearing the images of these families that are mom and dads and almost all the child movies. I mean, Disney, there's always like one parent that's dead, but it's always a mom and dad that's dead and leaving a mom and dad behind. Like it's never like this idea that parents, you know, so even if there isn't a mom and dad together in the story, there's always a dad missing or a mom missing. And so there's the heteronormative idea that she always has to contend with, that she has to talk about. But I hear her speaking out now. There's a PBS ad where it's talking about like how PBS helps kids to learn to read. And so it goes like, you know, my 3-year-old gets up shouting RR, and you know, he's watching the dinosaur, and which little boy doesn't like trains and dinosaurs and them together? And I hear like, what does she mean, which little boy? I'm a girl and I like trains and dinosaurs in the same kind of way. And I hear her saying like when you say, oh, ask your mom or dad, and she goes, or ask one of your moms. I hear her responding in this way. But the biggest thing she has to come out about is like when we are together with Baba, and she says Baba, and she'll say, this is where my sperm and egg, and people automatically put language of father in her mouth, and she always has to say, he's not my father, he's my Baba.
Right.
And then they ask her, what's that? And some people even push back at her and say, well, he is your father, because and then she has to deal with that all the time. And she has to say that she comes from an LGBT family, where she has to say like, yeah, you know, my mom dates women, or my mom, we don't say date, but we have the word sweetheart. That's like kind of like a all encompassing for like, you know, anything that you're like romantically linked to. So she'll say, you know, my mom has a girl sweetheart. My mom only likes girl sweethearts. And she'll say like, you know, when my mom was in Jamaica, she didn't like boy sweethearts. And then everybody gave her a hard time about it, and they were mean to her. And so that's why she came to America, so she could have any sweetheart she chooses. That's a language we use around the rainbow flag, where she'll wear a T-shirt with a rainbow flag on it. And she'll say, you know what this means? It means I can have any sweetheart I want. As opposed to this notion of like, one, the labels, or two, like it lives in the actions for her. So she doesn't quite know, she thinks that people who think that you only have, you know, one sweetheart of the opposite sex, like she feels like they're just not exposed. But because the norm is I can have any sweetheart I want, and some people only want girl sweethearts, and some people only want boy sweethearts, and some people want sweethearts who are not girls or boys, and some people want sweethearts that are like everything. So I think what it is every day I give her the language and I affirm, like if I hear her having a particularly difficult time with the one coming out process, like somebody's pushing back, I reach out to my community of like, you know, hodgepodge, gay, straight people. And I say to them, over the next 2 weeks, y'all are on duty to affirm Zuri's like, you know, whether it's she's having problems with having black girl hair in a white school, or she's having the dad thing coming at her, and people would be like, you're so lucky to have like, you have a mom and you have a Baba and you have all these aunties who love you, and like, you know, not everybody has a Baba, you know, like, can you remind me again what's a Baba? That's so special. Like, so they have to go on about it.
It takes a village.
That's smart.
You
That's
have
really
a
smart to put people around you.
Yeah, because
in that
she
way.
Don't listen to me. She's like, my mom thinks everything about me is great. I should never listen to her.
Well, she's very conscientious, and you do a really good job of keeping the communication open and clear.
But you should also know for that how she appears in those chats that we have online. Like, that's not everything about her. There are moments when she like falls apart, and then she doesn't feel strong, like, you know, if a boy does it, like she's all the things that any little girl is, but because our lives are so curated online, Yeah. You only get to see one version of her. That's kind of what I say to everyone, that you see a confident, like, 4-year-old, 3-year-old talking about, like, don't touch my body, or, you know, that's not all she is. Like, mm-hmm. she's often scared and unsure and, you know, like, I don't like my hair because my hair is, like, they say that it's fuzzy at school or whatever. Mm. I mean, you know, she's all of it, you know. Mm-hmm. But she's, when she has an opinion, she's pretty self-possessed and very articulate, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you do a really good job talking to her. I'm going to email you for tips.
You should come get tips when you see us shouting and screaming at each other in the house.
I'll take those too, because I screw that up.
You know, you don't have to use all the power all the time, you know, Mom.
I love that she has that language already, though.
It's biting me in the ass. Maybe I'm rethinking.
Creating strong women.
Did we have another question? I heard someone had another question.
There was one person in. Oh, nice.
Do you personally think that you care that in like 10 years your kiddo has a male or female? The term was that you used was sweetheart.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's a good question.
Yeah. Good question. Thank you.
That's a great question, actually. Thank you for asking it. This is one of those stories now where I'm tossing up whether to share it or not.
Share it.
I think it has to do with her daughter.
Producer Robin just stepped in.
And I'm saying only share it if you feel comfortable.
I know. I mean what she says.
That's how we land.
I mean what she says. Probably.
Oh, you too, Jesus freak. You know, she. We've talked about sexuality before, like what sweethearts she will have. And there are moments where she's definitive, like, I only want to have girl sweethearts when I grow up. And I was like, why is that? And then she'll be, because girls are nicer than boys. And then I was like, but, you know, it's a little early to limit yourself. You know, like, you might find a boy sweetheart who's, like, fabulous and, like, you know, is funny and all of that. And then she says, yeah, maybe. And then she'll be like, for example, she'll say, yeah, I think, you know, I think maybe like I'll have like only girl sweethearts and maybe only Henry. Because Henry's a good soccer player or whatever. But I think she's, what I worry about is her limiting herself so early. But then also I have to be able to listen to whatever she's telling me if she knows it, you know? Mm. So it's kind of dancing. It's kind of like staying in that line. So I'm less worried about what she will want at any given moment. I spend a lot more time making sure that I'm in the place where I'm accepting whatever she chooses in whatever moment. Because it's really not about me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm old and, you know, I'm going to be dead soon. So... I've had like all my sweethearts already, you know.
No,
a lot
the giveaway.
Of them,
the giveaway.
They've all left me, but you know, but basically, like my job as her mom is to give her the space to choose who she wants to be, who she wants to be close to, who she wants to acknowledge, what things she wants to do with her body and her life. Like that's my job. My job is not to choose for her. And if I really think about it, I just want her to be happy. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, like if I think about it, like people didn't want me to have my choice. So my happiness wasn't what they wanted to support. So I have to make sure like I'm giving her the thing that I said I wanted for myself when I was young. So, you know, barring she brings home a Trump, I'm probably going to be okay.
What will you do? I don't know. What would you do?
Let's just not think about that.
But that was beautifully said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happiness.
All right.
I think we have time for one more question, maybe?
Do we have one more?
Thank you so much. You've been such a listening audience. Thank you so much.
Is this on?
Yeah. You guys are beautiful.
Thank you so much for this conversation. Stacey Ann, I'm wondering if you could talk about the role of community in raising a child alone,
yes.
Single. I don't know how you identify, but and how you cultivate
all
that.
All of that, alone and single.
Me too.
The giveaway.
Giveaway.
Although I do have visitations from particular exes at times.
Oh,
but that's like
that's a village. That's another podcast. That's the community. That's another podcast.
I feel as if I could not. I mean, like, even my pregnancy, I was on bed rest and broke. Mm. And so, like, all these, like, black lesbians, black straight women, just black gay men, black straight people, one or two white people, you know, I mean, they really, like, showed up, I mean, with groceries and getting me to the hospital. Like, you know, I was on bed rest and bleeding all the time, so... And sometimes there would be like a gush of blood, which means I would have to go straight to the hospital. And so someone had to sleep in my house. And then when I was pregnant, I had to eat at 6 a.m. on the dot. If I didn't eat at 6, I'd be like sick the rest of the day. So somebody had to rise at 5 a.m. and make me breakfast. Like, that required like a whole bunch of like love. And, you know, you can imagine, like, I mean, I'm not suffering right now and I'm fucking irascible. So you can imagine what I was like. As a suffering pregnant woman and stuck in a bed, you know.
You also had a C-section too, and it's really hard to get around after a C-section.
Oh, but you know.
That was nothing.
You get around though. Like, when the kid came out of me, I was like perfectly happy and fine and just,
felt better.
Managing. The pregnancy was difficult. Like, I have a car in New York. It had to be moved from side to side, alternate sides parking. Like, I had shit to do. Like, my rent was due all the time. All the time it was due. You know, just shit had to be paid for. And people would just show up with, like, groceries and show up with, like, food. And, you know, fans sent me shit. Like, you know, my whole family has been absent from my life. And so... You know, the baby shower and those kinds of things, just good friends who just showed up. You know, Walter Mosley is a writer. He's Zuri's godfather. And so, you know, like, he like bought the crib, and like 1 month, like, I was going to be evicted, and he just wrote a check and just sent it. Like, different people showed up in that way. But then it's interesting that the people who were around to help me through the pregnancy, they weren't really around after that. Like, maybe they weren't like kid people. Or the details were different. And so a different community has emerged at different times. Like, you have different, it changes. Mm-hmm. It's not like the same people all the time, because the needs change, the timing changes. And for me, the lesson I've learned about community, because in my head, I was going to be all with these all fly lesbians. You know, they were going to be in my house, and it's going to be so cute because they were going to be holding the baby.
Right.
And we're going to have like all these sexy parties, like, with, you know, while we're breastfeeding.
Because that goes with that so well.
You know,
well.
We're going to like squirt each other. It's going to be great.
Oh.
But it was going to be so great. And then... All the sexy lesbians who were like around, you know, and who like lent themselves to me during pregnancy, they were like, I'm not coming over your house to go sit with a crying child. No. Mm-hmm. And I would be like, hey, can you like watch the baby? Like, I have a job this evening and the sitter canceled. Can you just come watch Zuri? Oh, man, I just made plans to have drinks with a friend.
Be like, I remember plans.
And then there's a silence. I'm like hoping to them, be like, okay, I'll cancel my plans. No. They'd be like, I'm going to motherfucking drinks. And that's what I'm doing. Like, you know, people would be like inviting you out. Like, I haven't seen you in so long. We're having drinks at 9 o'clock in the city. I'm like, I'm not going to go pay $12 for a fucking drink and take a cab to downtown and then pay somebody $20 an hour to watch my kid. That's not, no. That's not the rent. Do you know what I mean?
They always need it.
Different priorities, you know. So now I have like people who have like kids, and one of my closest friends is like an old dyke who's like retired and all her kids are grown, so she can pick up Zuri from school sometimes.
That's so great.
You know, and she can come and hang out with me during the day.
Maybe she can swing by and pick up our kids.
Yeah, I would love that. Can we
and
use her?
A lot of, you know, I'm friends with like a math teacher in the upper school. I'm friends with like the director of diversity. Like,
good
people at
you.
Her school, because I'm in the school all the motherfucking time. Like, I show up, that's where I am. You know, I'm friends with like wealthy white women. You know, and I have to go home and like pray, you know, because like it's a problematic friendship because I like them so much, but they're, you know, but I'm supposed to be hating you because you're like sleeping with the enemy. You know what I mean? But it's complicated. But that's kind of life with almost anything, whether, you know, you have somebody came out of your chocha or not. Like, you, life is complicated. Like, you look up and you're like, man, I never would have guessed I would be friends. Like, how the fuck I end up here? Like, I did for a gig for Spotify.
Yeah.
And then...
And I bum-rushed you.
Yeah, and you were like, come do this thing. Yeah.
I was like, hi, Stacey Anchin.
I kind of hounded you
but
a little
it's
bit.
Like, but you never kind of know, like, the thing with having a kid is that one thing I know that it has, like, jolted me out of whatever it was I thought I was doing with my life.
Right.
Because you just kind of can't... You can't plan the shit. You can't decide that this is what you're going to do because it's not. You know, you just kind of have to, like, go with the flow and be open and... You know, have sex during nap time, you know, and just be all right with
it's
that. Like, okay, 2 p.m, it's not an afternoon delight. It's a very tired, laborious, like licking of the clitoris for 20 minutes and hoping somebody comes and then you can just get up and just go handle the baby. Because that's kind of what life is. You have to make it fit with whatever. I used to be like, oh my God, I'm going to write. Yeah, I'm going to write, you know, I'm just going to wait for the inspiration. I wait around, I like, you know, have a glass of wine, maybe have like long, you know, luxurious sexual morning with some woman, drink, you know, red wine out of your navel on a train in Munich. And then like,
as you do,
writing a poem and it's great. Now it's like ESPN is like, you have a deadline, you have to get it to me by 4 tomorrow evening. And then the kid is like vomiting. And every time she sleeps between vomits, I'm like trying to like add two more words to the fucking article. Like that's kind of how life is. And I don't know how women who have like 9-to-5 jobs do it.
It's hard. Because
I would die.
It's hard.
I would be dead. I would be like dead. My vagina exhausting. Would be dead. My nipples would be dead. My eyes would be dead. All of me dead.
Are you using
dead,
your nipples
dead,
and
dead,
your
dead.
Vagina in your 9-to-5 job? Because generally speaking, maybe your back hurts from the seating, but that's about it really.
Yeah. But you have so much time in that office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And awful. Like, when do you like get to like sit in your own head?
Sometimes
don't
in the
you
office
do that
in meetings.
In front of the computer sometimes.
But I look like I'm paying attention, but I'm doing this. Just sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm really paying attention if my boss, Natalie, is listening on the live stream.
She's listening.
Yeah, but you know, but you just kind of like fit it in. Like, I never thought that, like, you know, I could change in the car, like, I could. You know, be sick and like, I don't know, man. You just like pull up your fucking pants and you just do it.
Mm-hmm. It's not about you anymore.
There's no rest.
Yeah, you just do it.
You just go.
Yeah, you just be like, oh my God, I'm feeling a little loopy. I'm not going out today.
Yeah. You're going to take a sick day. There's
getting
no sick
your ass
days.
To school because I'm not going to be in here all day with you.
Yes. Oh, that's the worst, too, when you think you might have a couple
God.
Hours.
Snow days that people are like, oh, my God, it's a snow day. I'm like, Jesus
just
Christ.
Just like, kill me with a snow day.
Yes.
And it's like, and the school is closed every other day.
I know,
it's
I
like,
know.
What are you but closed for now?
Well, ladies, we're really painting a great picture of parenthood.
Guys.
If there's anybody who was thinking about trying it. It
but
does.
And that's when you always go, but it's just, it's the best.
It's the best.
There's nothing else like it. I mean,
no.
The closest I can come is like maybe if you are like, you know, if you're like an artist and you have like this relationship with your art. But then your art, you can like put it aside.
Your art doesn't beat you
people
up.
People who fucking tell me that, I, you know, I'm like, I have a kid and they're like, yeah, I have a dog too.
No. No.
If I put Zuri in a cage and leave the house, the cops would be on me in a second.
Let's not do that.
Let's not do that.
No, but it's a go with the flow type thing. You got to take the punches as they go.
But it's not always go with the flow because sometimes you have to just make it happen. Like,
right.
You have
that's
a morning
true.
And you have like, it's an army. You know, like you're like, okay, we have to get out of here 15 minutes early. That means I have to be on your ass about breakfast and your teeth. And
from
you're here.
Before she
and
even
my
wakes
God,
up.
How long can it does it take to put on socks?
Why?
Your socks, just
put
them on.
Put them on.
And then the response is.
Yes.
And then the socks goes on the floor, and then you spend 15 minutes apologizing for yelling at her about the socks, and you're watching the clock go down, down, down.
It's like you were there in my house this morning. It's like you were there.
Or do you ever get the, it's my body, I don't have to put it on?
I haven't gotten that yet.
I get that with jackets.
I get, and I'm always saying,
and then we have a fight about, just let me bring the jacket. No. And then I'm like, too. I'm bringing the jacket. It's 22 degrees out. And then we get out and they're freezing and they're like, I'll take that jacket now. And I'm like, I will punch you in the face. Yeah. Why couldn't I just bring the jacket?
I just get, you're not the boss of everyone in the whole world. I didn't say
yes,
I was. I'm the boss of you right now. Put your shoes on. Put your shoes. Do you hear me? Did you hear me? Put your shoes on. It's like a constant.
How many times are you going to say it? I heard you the first time. So why you didn't put it on when you heard?
Oh, it's so fun.
Hallelujah.
But, well, you know, we've come a long way from this podcast.
Listen, From Oprah,
yes.
This podcast started because I was trying to get pregnant and it took me a long time to. And I mentioned this idea to you, Robin, at a bar. And I had no idea how crazy you are.
A little bit crazy.
And it has come to fruition. And we're here now having a live event with the incomparable Stacey Ann Chin.
These people are like really making me out to be more than I am.
No.
They're trying to sell you a 6 for a fucking 9 here.
It's been a journey.
Let them be the judge. They heard it.
I think they've enjoyed it. And it's been a journey to get to this place. And, you know,
I was going to say, where can people get you and buy your book and all that business?
You know, you can face tweet me on like all of the
all the socials.
Yeah, it's just Stacey Ann Chin for most things. StaceyAnn. Stacey Ann, Chin. Stacey Ann Chin on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, on, you know, Clitogram.
YouTube. You're on YouTube too.
You should start that. That's where
I feel
that's
you
real.
Of all people would be the one to start that.
Yeah. Wouldn't be me.
I think I'm on a dating app now, and like the most common question: prove that you're you.
Because you're
needless
famous.
To say, it hasn't gone anywhere. No,
I'm really hopeful about our giveaway of Stacey Ann Chin. Like, I feel really like it's promising. And by the way, that will be like season 4 where we meet your wife and then we talk about, and then Jamie and I just sit there and take all the credit. I feel like the show writes
we
itself.
We do that anyway. Yeah, but you brought some books too.
I would like a wife with health insurance.
That can happen.
Done.
That can happen.
You are going to a job every day.
Stacey Ann Chin on all the social. And we want to say thank you to WNYC for having us here. Yes. And Jennifer and Cameron at the Green Space. I mean, this was just delightful and way above what we deserve.
Yes,
so we
Ricardo,
thank you very
thank
much
you
for having us.
This has been so wonderful.
And thank you both for having me. It's been a fun conversation. I've forgotten that I am like, you know, phlegmy.
Right. You can tell. You can tell.
And thank you guys all for coming out in the rain and this Monday after Thanksgiving. Thank you. Oh, wait. We have to do one thing. Stacey Ann, we always end the show. We all say eggs, ovaries out. And that's how we end the show. And we want everyone
eggs
to join.
Eggs, ovaries out.
And that's how we end the show. So I think we should all join in with
everybody.
Us. Even our, especially our male people.
There's a couple.
We're only going along with this, but nobody else thinks it's cool,
like
right?
I just pulled.
Okay.
It's not cool. CCN, if there's nothing we've taught you, is that we're not cool. Yeah.
No, we just
but
pulled
I want
an
you
Oprah,
see the
though,
audience. Everybody out there, I want you to look at the audience. I wish you could see them. They are all like, what the fuck are we going to say?
They're like, eggs?
This is so fucking stupid.
Yes. Yes, that's
it
the beauty.
Is.
But because they invited us here and because we don't want to be like bad sports. Here
right.
We go.
I know. Thank you guys for doing that for us.
All right, we're going to
do it.
All right,
ready?
Yes.
Eggs,
ovaries, out.
Stacey
and Chin. Out. Eggs, ovaries, out. If ovaries could talk, they would say. Eggs, ovaries,
out. To our sponsor of this episode, MyFitJeans.
Don't forget to use that promo code OCT for your purchases.
Please do.
Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.